As Story Publishing presents Snowbound Crossroads. The first snowflakes drifted across the Friday night lights over Fairhaven High's football field, fine as cigarette ash. Michael Orlov stood by the chain-link fence at the 50-yard line, wool cap low, gloved hands cupped around a cardboard coffee. The liquid inside tasted burnt and faintly metallic, but it steamed the chill from his knuckles. The hometown Panthers lost possession again. A gusty moan rolled off the bleachers, then disappeared into the raw Ohio air. Michael's gaze slid past the players to the darker edge of the field, the dented pickups, the shuttered concession stand, half-frozen puddles glinting orange under sodium lamps. Fairhaven, population 8,000, on a generous day, carried a bruised decency he hadn't expected to find in America. Mills had closed, taxes had withered, yet the town persisted. Friday night football, Sunday bells, a library that still smelled of lemon oil and hope. Halftime. He drained the dregs, dropped the cup into an overflowing barrel, and headed for the exit. Parents in parkas drifted past, greeting him with nods reserved for the quiet mechanic who fixed their transmissions and asked no questions. They called him Mike, sometimes Mr. Orlov, the man behind Fairhaven Auto and Small Engine Repair, deliverance from unnecessary dealership fees since 2009. No one imagined the name was an alias filed beneath a stack of forged visas two states away, and that suited him fine. Survival demanded one rule: never contradict the lie out loud. Snow thickened during the walk to the garage. The building, an old Quonset hut from a shuttered National Guard depot, squatted behind the defunct aerospace plant he'd once been sent to watch. Inside, fluorescent tubes hummed. Malik Johnson stood at bay too, elbows deep in a 95 Civic. 17, all restless brilliance, Malik wore grease stains the way other kids wore varsity letters. "I pulled the carb, Mr. O," he called. "Float bowl's clean, but she still coughs cold." Michael peeled off his gloves. "Show me." Malik passed the part over. A frayed rubber gasket caught Michael's eye. "Vacuum leak," he said. "Replace the seal. Back the idle screw a quarter turn rich." Malik grinned, bright, unguarded. "Knew I was missing something." "You miss nothing," Michael said, leaning against the fender. "You observe, revise, succeed. That's how you leave this place. College is only a maybe. You seen tuition? Engines are honest. Universities? Less so. Honesty gets scholarships." Malik squinted. "You ever go to college?" "Different sort of schooling," Michael answered. "Uniforms, not sweatshirts." He could have added sniper towers and dawn assaults, but that belonged to Mikhail Orlovich Kuznetsov, GRU captain, not Mike the mechanic. Malik accepted the half-truth and bent back to work. Michael washed grease from his palms, and an old briefing room flickered across his mind. Green walls, a brass wolf's head coat hook. "You performed adequately in Grozny. Your next mission requires silence, not courage." Silence had brought him here to watch a drone blade project that died years ago. When Moscow stopped sending orders, or pay, field officers were told to fade. So he stayed in Fairhaven, where the skies were no grayer than home and the coffee, while terrible, was endless. "Lock up when you're done," he said, shrugging into his coat. Malik's hum followed him out. Downtown was six blocks of brick fronts, some boarded, some stubbornly lit. He passed the factory whose shattered windows howled in the wind, the reason he'd arrived, now just rusted ribs. On Main, he ducked into the public library, drawn by warmth and a familiar voice. Grace Whitaker sat in a half-circle of children, a picture book on her knees. Dark hair shot with silver-framed slate-colored eyes. Grief still lived there, 6 years after her husband's helicopter scattered over Helmand. She read about a traveling bear who lost his map but found kind strangers. The kids giggled. When she closed the book, she met Michael's gaze and lifted two fingers in greeting. "Story hour draws a crowd," he said as he approached. "Anywhere warm with crayons does," she replied. "I like an audience that still believes strangers help lost bears instead of shooting them. Optimism makes good bedtime reading." His accent slipped on optimism. She noticed but said nothing. "You at the game?" "Briefly. Panthers down 14. "Teaching resilience since 1952, she said, almost smiling. "Hungry? I'm heading to the diner when I close up. I could use real coffee. 7:30. I'll be there." A snowplow rattled past outside. Grace herded the children toward crafts, and Michael left lighter than he'd arrived. On Pine Street, he waited at a red light, boots planted in slush. A traffic camera above the intersection clicked, its lens rimmed with frost. He never saw the moment the feed hiccuped, two frames gone. In a server farm outside Washington, an anomaly flag lit yellow. Probability match 62.4%. Subject, Kuznetsov, Mikhail Orlovich. Status, inactive, asset, disavowed. Ellis Monroe, 24, probationary analyst, blinked at the alert in Section 4B, image analysis. The enhanced frame showed a bundled man, cheekbones and brow matching a photo dated 2003. Ellis typed possible match and pushed it up the chain. Better cautious than unemployed. At 7:30 sharp, Michael stepped into the Bright Spot diner. Pink neon buzzed against chrome. Deputy Nora Reeves occupied the counter, boots puddling meltwater, a bowl of chili in her hands. Grace slid into the booth opposite him, shrugging out of her peacoat. "Catch the second half?" she asked. "Spared myself." Rainey, the waitress, poured coffee with the solemnity of a priest. Deputy Reeves saluted them with her spoon. Conversation drifted. Burst pipes, rumors a chain pharmacy would replace the hardware store, the early snow. Michael answered when expected, content to listen otherwise. Presence over confession, the town's unspoken rule. Midway through a slice of cherry pie, his shoulders unknotted. Neon hum, cinnamon-laced coffee, Grace's laugh at Rainey's scandalous choir joke. Together, they felt like reprieve. Hundreds of miles east, the alert reached counterintelligence. A new folder blinked to life. Prospective subject, Fairhaven OO. Utility bills, business license, and unpaid speeding ticket flowed inside. Rainey topped their mugs. Grace teased Michael about his accent on 13. He chuckled, believing for a heartbeat that the snow outside was only snow, not the hush before an avalanche. He tipped Rainey, walked Grace to her car. Their breath plumed white. He opened her door. She thanked him with a smile that felt like home. Down the block, the traffic camera's red LED winked against the dark. The flakes kept falling, soft and steady, erasing tracks as fast as they were made. The briefing room lay three stories beneath Langley's polished marble lobby, a concrete bunker that smelled of copier toner and yesterday's burnt coffee. Halogen strips bleached every face. On the screen, a traffic cam still enlarged until the pixels fuzzed. A bundled man in a knit cap, shoulders squared, cheekbones cut from stone. "Probable hit on Kuznetsov," said Unit Chief Darius Wilmer, a hawk-nosed veteran who'd left the last of his awe in Bosnia, 95. Initial confidence 62%, 79% after skeletal overlay. Rebecca Klein sat one chair back from the table's edge, the unobtrusive seat where you saw everything. 29 and only 2 years out of the analyst bullpen, she'd swapped pencil skirts for field canvas to prove an Ivy League resume could hunt too. Her auburn hair was scraped into a blunt bun. Beneath the table, her knee bounced with contained voltage. "Location?" she asked. "Fairhaven, Ohio. Rust Belt town that missed the rebound and kept on missing it. Subject's alias, Michael Orlov, owns a small engine garage, keeps his head down. If it really is Kuznetsov, he's a GRU sleeper who never got the wake-up call." Rebecca studied the image. The eyes were half-shadowed, but the posture rang true, imperious even while waiting at a Midwestern crosswalk. "Mission," she said. "Locate, confirm, exfil if he cooperates, neutralize if he doesn't," Wilmer answered, as though reciting lunch options. "Quiet execution, no headlines." Barton from Legal added, "Director wants a tidy win for the Oversight Committee. You run point, Klein. Good chance to make your field billet permanent." "Opportunity," she heard, and felt her pulse climb. "Assets on site? Local deputy we can pressure. Two techs for mobile overwatch. You'll link up with a tactical team out of Cleveland. Wheels up in 60. The meeting dissolved into checklists. Rebecca closed the slim folder on the world's last Cold War ghost and pictured Fairhaven. Corrugated rooftops under early snow, a mechanic with hands scarred by more than torque wrenches. She wondered if he still dreamed in Russian. Saturday evening settled over Fairhaven like soot. Inside the Quonset Hut garage, Michael Orlov balanced the monthly books on a dented stool. The online banking page stalled, cursor spinning two beats too long. Not enough to worry a civilian. Plenty for a man who once tracked missile launches by server lag. He closed the laptop. Overhead, a fluorescent tube flickered. Cheap ballast, maybe, but the timing felt aimed. He stood, stretching the ache from his shoulders and glanced toward the back wall. The DVR that should have been recording the defunct plant's exterior cams was gone. Four unplugged BNC cables dangled like severed veins. The knot behind his sternum drew tight. From beneath a 09 Impala, Malik slid out, wrench in hand. "Need me to close up, Mr. O?" Michael forced a smile. "Please, I've got an errand." The kid frowned. Malik detected tension the way others smelled rain, but nodded. Michael stepped into the night, boots crunching frozen gravel. A silver SUV idled across the road, new, anonymous, and rolling the instant he looked its way. Certainty settled like frost. Some distant server farm had whispered his true name, and Fairhaven's benign neglect was over. Near midnight, the bright spot diner glowed like a transistor radio left on low. Inside, snow-weary silence reigned, one trucker asleep in a corner booth, Rainy wiping formica, and a solitary woman at the counter cupping tea. She wore a navy pea coat, city tailoring, not county. Beside her sat a paperback, the spy who came in from the cold, face down beneath the steam. Coincidence was for children. Michael took a stool two seats away, body angled so he could watch her reflected in the back bar mirror. Rainy poured him coffee. Grace said to thank you, the kids loved the paper snowflake trick. Glad it landed. He sipped, burnt, metallic again. Tonight the taste felt like prophecy. The woman spoke without turning. The health of a town, they say, can be measured by whether the library stays open past 7. Her voice carried East Coast polish trying on Midwestern ease. Michael answered in his mechanic drawl. Arteries might be clogged, but the heart still pumps. She let out a quick breath of amusement, met his eyes in the mirror. I passed the old aerospace plant on my way in. Looks dead as Pompeii. Been shuttered 10 years. America stops building things, somebody somewhere takes notes. Not tourist chatter, a probe. He parried. Places die, people adapt. You with the Bureau of Nostalgia? She pivoted, offering her hand. Rebecca, just passing through. Mike. The shake was brief, polite. Two animals measuring distance. You always drink coffee at midnight, she asked. Helps me think. About? Gaskets. Maybe salvation, you? Dead languages, she said, and why we betray the living for them. The line had the hollow ring of institutional wisdom. Michael stayed relaxed but slid his right foot toward open space. Outside, snow thickened, muffling engines. He pictured a tactical van parked just beyond the neon wash. Rebecca swirled her teabag. I read once that Russian has no word for fair play. True? We borrow from sports, Chesnaya Igra, he allowed, accent curling on the words. Problem is, our referees keep changing the rules. America pretends it doesn't, she said, almost wistful. Rainey arrived with refills. The trucker snored on. Rebecca lowered her voice. Speak. Say a man served a country that later discarded him. Another country offers shelter. At what point does sanctuary turn into betrayal? A man who stops running betrays no one, Michael said. He just chooses to live. And if the past shows up at his door, then he decides how much more of his soul he can mortgage. She held his gaze a moment longer, the scar at her temple whitening. Good answer, Mike. She laid cash beside the mug, stood. Maybe I'll see you around. Through the window, he watched her stride to the silver SUV. The driver's door opened without a key, confirmation enough. He left bills by his cup and followed after a deliberate count of 30. The SUV's taillights dwindled east. Snow hissed against the street lamps. The diner's neon hummed behind frosted glass. The apartment over the garage was dark when he reached it. Malik's bay lay silent. Inside, Michael bolted the door and pulled the olive rucksack from the false bottom bench. Packing was muscle memory. Thermal layers, satellite phone, wad of hundreds, Browning high power oiled and ready. Last, the snapshot of Grace reading to the kids during Fall Fest. He hesitated, then slid it between spare socks. Rotating blue light washed across Main Street, Deputy Reeves on patrol, or a borrowed county cruiser already hunting him. Hours, not days. He cut the apartment's breaker, no heat signature, and shouldered the pack. Before stepping into the stairwell, he allowed one soft exhale, half fatigue, half regret. Fairhaven had asked only decency. Now, decency required disappearing before bullets rewrote the town's story. On the street, he hugged awnings, snow muffling every step. Two blocks south, the library porch light still burned. He thought of Grace inside, maybe shelving picture books, but the risk was unthinkable. Later, if later existed, he would write. A freight whistle moaned from the river valley. Michael turned west, into a darkness that smelled of iron and oncoming storm, heart beating the old cadence, observe, evade, endure. Grace Whitaker's colonial on Maple Street had been raised when salt pork was currency and daylight told the time. In the first hours after midnight, the house groaned, beams flexing under fresh snow. Grace, barefoot in threadbare flannel, sat on the living room floor sorting donations the library board kept meaning to get to. Paper still smelled like childhood, glue, dust, promise. Near the bottom of the box, she found something that had never sat between Dick and Jane primers, a military olive shortwave set, no bigger than a Bible, antenna unscrewed for storage. The earpiece cord was coiled with the tidy patience of someone who had done it 100 times. Tape along the back held a strip of paper. Block letters had been pressed, not inked, the silent handwriting of a soldier. Her pulse jumped, the same jolt she'd felt the afternoon 2 Marines came to the school and took off their caps. Ben Whitaker's med evac had met an RPG. 6 winters later, the absence could still hollow a room. Grace thumbed the radio's power stud, dead battery. She crossed to the mantel, slid Ben's folded flag aside, and opened the field manual he'd hidden beneath it. In the back, taped for eventualities, sat a blister pack of lithium AAs. She almost laughed at his foresight, fed the cells into the radio, and watched a lone green diode blink to life. Static poured out. She swept past Spanish, Mandarin, a burst of digital chirps, then an English weather station droning barometric figures for the Canadian Maritimes. Nothing called her name, yet the hairs on her arms refused to lie flat. A memory surfaced. Michael in the diner, eyes ticking toward the doorway when Deputy Reeves bragged about the county's new squad radios. Grace felt the tumblers of a safe fall into place. If trouble had come for Michael, she would not leave him alone. Ben had taught her courage was simply refusing to abandon the person beside you. She wrapped the radio in a wool scarf, slid it into her satchel, and whispered the old lesson to the quiet house. Improvise. Adapt. 2 miles away, the Quonset Hut garage hummed with dying fluorescent light when Michael slipped in near 3. High power low, muzzle tracking its own shadow, he swept the bays. Only the half-dismantled Civic waited, hood ajar. Malik slept on a creeper beneath it, earbuds glowing blue. Michael touched his shoulder. The wrench came up before recognition settled. Mr. O, it's past midnight. Malik's gaze landed on the rucksack. What's wrong? I need your mind more than your muscles, Michael said, voice hushed. Federal agents are coming. They think I'm someone else, and they won't ask politely. I'm leaving before daylight. I need wheels, no trackers, and I want you to have this. He handed over a thick manila envelope. Malik opened it. Cash, discipline stacks, how much? 36,000, tuition, and a roof for your first year. The kid shook his head. Why give me everything you have? Because engines aren't your only gift, and because I may not be here to sign a recommendation letter. Michael swallowed. Help me disappear. That's the price. Outside, a branch cracked under snow. Malik tucked the envelope under the Civic seat and offered his hand. Tell me the plan. We need a throwaway van and a bigger ride north. Doyle McBride still running that lakeside logistics tanker? Yeah, stops at the Petro off I-80 around 4. Reach him on CB. Meanwhile, pull the O2 Windstar from salvage, swap plates, strip the GPS, top off fluids. Malik's grin came quick, fierce. Give me 20 minutes. The Petro truck stop squatted where interstate ambition met the rusted spine of the steel corridor. Sodium lamps threw sickly halos over drowsing semi-rigs. Inside, the diner smelled of fryer grease and defeat. Doyle McBride nursed bitter coffee in the last booth. 72, shoulders still broad, he wore a denim jacket that had survived Quang Tri. Diesel exhaust always carried a hint of cordite to him. The bell chimed. A man in coveralls slid into the booth without asking. Replaced your number 4 injector last June, he said. Warned the distributor wouldn't like winter. Speak winter's here. Doyle's hand drifted toward the buck knife on his belt. Distributor's holding. I'm asking for something else. 3 passengers, light luggage. Need the lakeshore north of Ashtabula by dusk, then we vanish. You keep rolling. Doyle studied the stranger, cheekbones like carved stone, stillness that belonged on a sniper range. Trouble wearing a badge? Yes. Why pick me? You served. You understand debts that never close. That hit bone. Doyle exhaled through his nose. My rig rolls at 4:30. Catwalk after the way station, mile 212. One rule, no guns in my sleeper. We'll respect your truck, Michael said, and slid a roll of hundreds across the formica. Fuel and silence. As Michael stood, two men in park ranger jackets entered, eyes sweeping the room too methodically. Doyle blocked their view with his body, coughing loud enough to buy Michael the parking lot. By the time the rangers reached the door, snow had swallowed every print. Doyle rubbed the old shrapnel scar at his wrist. Sometimes the war found you anyway. He went to warm the engine. Pre-dawn light seeped into the library basement when Grace slipped inside. Concrete walls, mildew, the soft tick of the boiler. She extended the radio's antenna. Static, then the unmistakable rattle of five-digit groups, Russian number station, cold as 60s espionage. She shivered, more anger than fear. The payphone on the wall hadn't rung this century. She lifted the receiver and dialed the garage, left a message in code only Michael would hear. Story hour canceled. Bear found a new compass. He played the tape at 3:58 while Malik torqued lug nuts on the Windstar salt-eaten gray. Michael rewound, listened again, and pocketed the cassette. Grace, he said, she's in. Malik glanced at the clock. 35 minutes to I-80, tight window. Then don't miss. Michael shoved the tuition envelope into the visor. If something happens to me, you drive straight to Columbus and enroll. Promise. Nothing happens to you, Malik said, voice flat with decision. They killed the lights, left the doors chained but unlocked, a parting favor to the next tenant. A pale ribbon of dawn edged the courthouse dome as they rolled into the library lot. Grace's Prius idled behind a dumpster, exhaust feathering the air. She climbed into the Windstar's rear seat, radio clutched like a relic. I think someone's sweeping the bands, she said. I caught one coded burst, nothing since. You shouldn't be here, Michael told her. Neither should a children's librarian own a Glock, she answered, setting the pistol on the cushion. Ben believed strangers were worth saving. So do I. Their eyes locked, hers storm gray, his the color of spent shell casings. Malik stared straight ahead, pretending interest in the dashboard. Michael nodded once. All right, you ride with Malik to marker 212. I'll approach Doyle on foot and make sure the route is clean. Signal is a wave, nothing tactical. Grace smiled, small but real. Malik pulled onto the street. Tires bit the snow. Somewhere behind them a siren began, a lone wail trying to decide which direction to choose. In the side mirror, Fairhaven shrank, lights muted by falling flakes. They aimed north, three silhouettes sharing one thin hope that the next mile marker might still offer mercy. Night, reluctant, lifted just enough to show the road. A dull rose glow seeped along the eastern rim of the sky, thin as cigarette smoke and not yet brave enough to be called dawn. Under that false light, the air felt metallic, a lid someone had forgotten to screw down tight. High overhead a drone prowled, no larger than a gull to the naked eye, yet its rotors stitched a fretful whine through the stillness. Michael lay belly down beneath a cedar windbreak 50 yards from the I-80 way station. Frost crusted the needles, crackling each time he drew breath. Through cheap binoculars, he watched Doyle McBride's Kenworth creep toward the checkpoint. Orange flashers spun in the pre-dawn murk. Two highway patrol cruisers boxed the lane, an unmarked Suburban idled behind them, antenna farm quivering. Federal. Inside the cab, Doyle's silhouette stayed loose, driver's side elbow hooked over the sill the way long-haul men had done since Eisenhower gave them asphalt. When the trooper signaled, Doyle set the air brakes, hiss, thunk, and killed the engine. Morning, sir. Where are you headed? The trooper asked. Flashlight jittering just enough to betray nerves. Lakeside Logistics, Cleveland Docks, refrigerated feedstock. Doyle's grin could still sell cigarettes to Marines under shellfire. Manifests in the visor. The trooper scanned the papers, then glanced toward the Suburban. A man in a dark suit stepped out, too polished for county pay grade. CIA. He took the manifest, circled the rig, eyes combing for contraband. The Kenworth's tag held a battered purple heart frame. The suit paused, recalculated, and handed the clipboard back. Drive safe. Sleep past mile 218. Appreciate it, Doyle said. Diesel thunder filled the awkward space. The rig rolled forward beneath a portable radiation arch. No beeps, no alarms. The gate lifted like a reluctant eyelid. From his cedar hide, Michael exhaled. The bluff had held. He thumbed the burner phone. One vibration confirmed Doyle was through. A second warned the lane was heavy with feds. He backed out of the trees, erasing prints as he moved. Wolves left fewer tracks. 5 miles south, Malik Johnson nursed the Windstar along County Route 14, while Grace rode shotgun, white-knuckled around her satchel. The heater wheezed lukewarm air tinged with antifreeze. "You all right?" he asked. "Best impression of Brave I've got," she said. A Glock lay in the glove box, Sermon on final options. They rounded a bend into a splash of red strobes, another checkpoint. A cruiser spanned the center line. Deputies waved them down while a German Shepherd paced the shoulder. "Too late to U-turn." Malik lowered the window. "Morning. Where you headed?" The deputy sounded as tired as the sky. "Taking my aunt to dialysis in Sandusky," Malik said, nodding at Grace. She managed pale and fragile. "Speak. Pop the back, please." The tuition envelope still rode in the visor. Malik's pulse hammered. He reached for the latch, then the cruiser radio barked. "Unit 4, stand by, drone scan negative, possible subject northbound I-80. The deputy hesitated, winter wind knifing through the open window. "Close it up, you're clear," he finally said, waving them through. 40 yards later, Grace let out a shaky breath. "Next checkpoint won't be that kind, and the Windstar's tagged now. Then we ditch it." Malik's eyes swept the roadside. Ahead, chain links surrounded the school bus depot, 2 dozen yellow bluebirds sleeping under snow. A salt truck idled by the maintenance shack. He grinned. Field trip. He killed the lights, coasted behind the depot's south wall, and slipped through a utility gap in the fence. Snow muffled their steps. Malik chose the oldest bus, pre-GPS faded stop arm. He slid through the driver's window, popped the panel under the wheel, and greeted the ignition wires like old friends. The starter groaned, coughed, caught. Dash lights glowed red. Grace watched the sky. The drone's whine passed overhead, then faded. "All aboard," Malik whispered. The interior smelled of vinyl seats and bubblegum fossils. He eased the bus through the gap, steering north along the access road that paralleled the interstate. Michael followed a drainage cut where cattails rattled like dry bones. The drone hovered somewhere upwind, blind to shadows hugging the culvert. When the bus lumbered from the trees, exhaust plume pink in newborn light, he sprinted, caught the mirror bracket, and hauled himself onto the stepwell. Inside, Grace offered a determined smile. Malik kept his eyes forward. "Checkpoint 2 miles ahead," Michael said, breathing hard. "State and federal. They know the van's plate. They'll eyeball every vehicle." "Let 'em." Malik opened the throttle. The diesel roared, gears complaining until they found agreement. Michael walked the aisle. Graffiti covered the benches. Names in hearts, crude anatomy, a single hopeful Panthers 2017 champs. He cracked the rear emergency hatch half open to muddy the bus's heat signature. Up front, red and blue lights strobed the roadblock. 2 cruisers parked sideways, spike strips glittering like shark teeth. Behind them, a tan Humvee waited, M240 mounted. The earlier Suburban sat off center, rear hatch open. Malik mashed the pedal. Speed climbed, 25, 35. We're a battering ram on wheels. "Center the gap," Michael said, racking the high power but keeping the safety on. "No shooting unless they start." Grace gripped the rail. "If they fire into a school bus, they won't risk it," he insisted. "They still think we're civilians." "Let's hope principal beats panic," she thought but kept silent. 100 yards. Sirens wailed. Deputies waved, unsure whether to run or stand. The Humvee turret hesitated, then swung. Malik laid on the air horn, 1 long, righteous blast echoing across the flats. "Hold on," he shouted. Michael braced against seat backs. Grace dropped into a crouch. The grill met the first spike strip. Tires shrieked as steel teeth shredded rubber. Sparks sprayed beneath them. Momentum barely faltered. 20 yards. Deputies dove clear. A single tracer spat from the turret, skimming the roof like a malignant star. Malik flinched but held course. Impact loomed, windshield full of cruiser. Metal, glass, inevitability. 10 yards, and the world inhaled. Impact never came the way physics promised. At 5 yards, Malik twitched the wheel a hair right, threading the bluebird through the gap between parked cruisers. Mirrors screamed as they sheared against push bars, glass spiderwebbed across the windshield, but the fenders missed steel by the width of a hymn book. The bus fishtailed past the Humvee. Its gunner, stunned, tracked them like a carnival duck he'd been warned not to drop. Behind them, two agents in the Suburban sent warning shots that sang off the stop sign welded above the rear window. Michael's high power answered twice, each round spiking the SUV's roof rack and lopping the satellite antenna. Radios on the blockade went abruptly dumb. The Bluebird lurched another 50 yards before shredded tires bared their rims and the ancient drivetrain quit in a cloud of steam. Malik killed the master switch and sagged over the wheel, breathing like a sprinter past the tape. Grace stood, head brushing the cracked safety glass. "Everybody breathing?" "My pride's bruised," Malik said, flexing his hands. "The rest is negotiable." "No leaks," Michael confirmed. "Move." They spilled through the rear hatch into ankle-deep slush. Sirens overlapped behind them, but the cruisers first had to untangle themselves. North of the interstate, soy fields rolled away to a stand of silos, the tallest a 70-foot cylinder with a faded farm coupe logo. "Grain elevator," Michael said. "Cover, elevation, and a service road for Doyle." Malik slung the satchel. Grace kept the Glock low beside her leg. They sprinted, breath feathering in the hard air. Somewhere a meadowlark probed one note and thought better of it. Under the elevator's shadow, the air stank of mildewed barley. Concrete bins rose like catacombs. Broken louvers dripped dirty light. In an empty loader pit, Malik rotated his left wrist and winced. "Tweaked it on the wheel," he muttered. Michael wrapped it with a field bandage. "Wrap first, doubt later." He turned to Grace. "Those rounds were flechette tracers. Next time they'll skip the warning." "And you just cut their comms," she said. "Rebecca Klein will take that personally." "She adapts. We adapt faster." Outside, gravel crunched. Doyle's Kenworth easing in behind the silos, its idle thumping steady as an old dog's heart. Doyle appeared in the doorway, denim jacket dusted white. "Expected you in a convertible," he said. "We traded up to a parade float," Malik answered, shaky but game. They crouched behind the trailer skirts, while Michael scratched a crude map in the dirt with a rebar stub. Rail spur here, lake road there, federal net tightening like a drawstring. "I head south, draw them into the rail yard," he finished. "You three keep rolling for the trawler." Grace crossed her arms. "You keep setting yourself on fire for us. That's the arithmetic. They want me, not the convoy." She touched his sleeve, fingers lingering. "Come back from the yard." "Intention noted," he said, voice brushing tenderness. Doyle marked an X on the flank of a rust-brown boxcar parked on the spur. "Doors unlocked, maintenance cash inside, flares, tools, maybe a flask of dinosaur tears." Malik tightened the bandage. "We'll monitor 19. If you call loose lug nuts, we circle back hot." "That call means you stay gone," Michael said. Malik opened his mouth, closed it, finally nodded. "Tuition's non-refundable." Michael squeezed his shoulder, then slipped into the open, angling toward the thread of tracks where Cleveland sprawl began. Behind him, the Kenworth hissed into gear, carrying Doyle, Grace, and Malik toward the lake's cold mercy. Langley. 11:42 a.m., Rebecca Klein studied frozen drone footage while ballistics images flickered across her tablet. One frame showed the sheared antenna on the Suburban. The recovered slug lay pristine, but for Browning, rifling grooves. "Matches the casings from Fairhaven," forensics-led Hector Ruiz said, wedding ring-catching fluorescent glare. "Deliberately disabled? Not aimed to kill." Klein frowned. "Chechnya reports say he shot center mass. Now he's shooting hardware." "Maybe the town civilized him," Ruiz offered. "Or he's buying time." She spread satellite prints, an abandoned spur, a yard of mothballed boxcars, all within half an hour's hike of the grain elevator. "Rails run straight to Erie. We box the yard, steer him into open ground. Director wants low body count. Tell the shooters to copy Orlov, arms and antennas." She keyed her mic. "TAC Alpha, redeploy to the Cuyahoga rail complex. Air asset on low thermal, strobes only on my call." Her pulse steadied, her conscience didn't. The more she understood his moves, the less she wanted his name on a body tag. Dusk slid over Ohio like a bruised lid. Michael kept to drainage ditches paralleling the tracks, counting drone passes by the whine of rotors. Once a black pod skimmed overhead, he lay motionless under a buckthorn tangle until it drifted on. The yard spread before him, rusted rails, gondolas frozen in half loads, sodium lamps flickering jaundiced halos. Snow fell again, light as ash. Inside the marked boxcar he found Doyle's cash, flare gun, two road flares, half a can of diesel. He soaked a rag, knotted it to a crowbar, instant torch. Footsteps crunched along ballast, Two-man stack, IR lasers quivering. Michael waited on a reefer roof, breath frosting the slide of his pistol. When the pair passed, he tossed a loosened bolt. It clanged 10 yards east. Lasers swung. He slipped the other way, melting into a gulch of scrap ties. 7 minutes since first contact. Time to become the wildfire they'd chase. At a junction shed, he kissed a flare to life, plunged it into the diesel-soaked rag, and jammed the torch between burlap sacks of magnesium oxide stamped 1993. Orange bloom roared, heat painting the night violent. Shouts rose, drone sensors would pivot, gaps would open. Michael cut south, weaving through cars that flickered in carnival reds. A tack light speared the dark. He ducked behind a hopper. "I'm not here to kill you," he called, Russian edges roughening the words. "Back off and see tomorrow." Silence, then hurried footfalls retreating. The kid valued lungs over glory. Good. Snow thickened, swallowing sound. He stepped into an unlit quadrant near the Cuyahoga Cut, city glow smudging the clouds. Ice-rimmed water whispered beyond the trees. Click. Soft, definite. 3 crimson dots blossomed on his chest, pulsing like patient hearts. Rebecca Klein's voice crossed the dark, calm as algebra. "Captain Kuznetsov, your war is over. Drop the pistol and kneel." Michael raised the high power by the slide, thumb on the safety. "I promised myself nobody would die in Ohio because of me." "Help me keep that promise," she said, rifle steady but breath a shade uneven. Snowflakes settled on the warm muzzle, hissed and vanished. The lasers brightened, and the winter yard held its breath, waiting to learn whose conviction would break first. Snow swallowed noise in the Cuyahoga rail yard, leaving only the faint tick of ash drifting from the freight shed Michael had set alight. 3 red laser dots pulsed on his chest, steady, indifferent. 20 paces away, Rebecca Klein stood under a dying sodium lamp, AR pressed tight to her shoulder, 2 younger operators fanning out with sanctioned urgency. Michael spoke first, voice low enough not to ricochet off the boxcars. "Close enough to smell the cordite on my coat, Agent Klein. Want more of it in your lungs?" "Drop the weapon." No tremor, no swagger, just the fatigue of decisions stacked higher than her sleep. He knelt and laid the high power on the ballast. "One question, then choose your trigger." "Ask." "In Langley's basement, outside the briefing cubes, does the mosaic still show the world cracked where we broke it?" A pause, one rookie shifted, puzzled. Rebecca answered, "They retiled last year, fewer cracks. Paint over a fissure, the stone still remembers." Sirens drew closer. Rebecca's earpiece hissed, but she kept her rifle on target. "You burned a shed," she said. "You rammed a blockade with a school bus. Civilians sheltered you." "The stone remembers that, too." "I haven't killed anyone since Chechnya. How many has your career buried?" The rookie on her right, baby-faced, name-tape Dickie, took a step, muzzle rising. Michael lifted empty palms. "If the first round you fire for your country drops a defector instead of a terrorist, it echoes every time you close your eyes. I've tasted that echo. It rots." Dickie's aim wobbled. Rebecca felt it. "Dickie, left flank, Cohen, right. We wait for TAC Alpha." "Listen to her," Michael said. "She still believes in neat endings." Then he slipped into the shadows between hoppers. Rebecca cursed and snapped a shot that blew apart a marker light inches from his shoulder. Shard stung his cheek. He rolled once and vanished in the iron maze. Dickie rushed after him. "Dickie, hold position." Too late. Boots skidded on cinder. Michael waited behind a grain car until the silhouette eased past, then hooked an arm, twisted the carbine free, and pinned the kid face down. "Spare your conscience." He stripped the magazine, ejected the round, and flung both into the dark. "Stay down." Rebecca's shout echoed. "Dickie, status." No answer. She swung her rifle but held fire. Too many blind corners. On the service siding, a maintenance speeder hid under a tarp. Michael vaulted a coupler, yanked the canvas clear, thumbed a rusty kill switch. The engine coughed, caught. Rebecca climbed a gondola roof, sighted, fired, spark off rail. The speeder shot forward, steel wheels screaming as it rattled north toward the river. Rails outlast regimes, he thought, wind tearing at his coat. Fairhaven Public Safety Annex, 8:17 p.m., fluorescent tubes buzzed over Grace Whitaker. Agent Paul Mendelson's smile was too polished for the hour. "Ms. Whitaker, Michael Orlov called you this morning, your phone logs. He asked if the library still needed space heater donations," she said evenly. "It does." Deputy Nora Reeves leaned against the urn, arms folded. Mendelssohn slid a grainy photo across the table, a school bus punching through a blockade. We can place you in that vehicle. Can you place me behind the wheel or just in your hypothesis? His pen hovered. Where were you between 1330 and 1400? Sorting returns at the exterior drop. The security camera covers it. He sighed, gathered his folders. Don't leave town. Budget won't allow it. When the door closed, Nora locked it. Your Prius is in impound. Keys vanished. Into snow, Grace said. I need a ride east now. They'll pull my badge. At Ben's funeral, you said some debts don't expire. Nora drew a breath, grabbed her parka. Cruiser GPS pings every minute. We'll take the plow. Forecast calls for flurries, Grace said. We're just being civic-minded. Cuyahoga River Spur, 9:06 p.m. The speeder clacked onto a weed-choked siding. Michael killed the engine and listened. Rotor washed south, searchlights on the wrong bend. He jogged the abandoned access road until fog swallowed the warehouses and left only their sour tang. Beyond the breakwater, a diesel throbbed. The Agnes D, Doyle's 80-foot trawler. A silhouette waited near a crane. Malik, wrist-taped. Thought you were taking the scenic route? I did. Michael clapped his shoulder. Fog still on our side? Kills radio. Doyle's cursing the depth finder. Navigation lights pulsed through the murk. Grace appeared atop a county snowplow, amber beacons spinning. She dropped down. Nora Reeves stayed with the cab, engine idling. Grace touched the cut on Michael's cheek. If we're alive tomorrow, you're buying proper coffee. Threat or promise? Both. She kissed him, quick and unapologetic. Doyle lowered the gangplank. We shove off in three. Speak. Lake's got more attitude than Marines at Belleau Wood. A red flare erupted behind the warehouses. The CIA perimeter had found the plow. Michael scrambled aboard. Doyle hauled the plank up, engines rumbling. Nora gunned the plow west, lights strobing, bait for bigger fish. Wheelhouse, Doyle at helm, Malik over the radar. Mostly static. Grace aft by the winch, Glock under her coat, rotor blades thumped overhead. A Black Hawk burst from the fog, searchlight bleaching the trawler's starboard side. Loud hailer. Vessel Agnes D, heave to immediately. This is the United States government, Doyle muttered. Stall this engine and we're dead in the water. Michael slammed the telegraph forward. The diesel sputtered, coughed, caught. Prop wash frothed. The bow plunged into thicker fog. Above, the spotlight thrashed, frustrated. On VHF, Rebecca Klein's voice slipped through static, closer than geography allowed. Mikhail, you don't have to vanish. There's an alternate ending. He keyed the mic. Learn to read cracks in stone, Rebecca. They run wider than orders. No reply, only static. Grace slid beside him, fingers weaving through his. Fog's thick, good for disappearing. Bad for navigation, Doyle grumbled, though a smile tugged his beard. Fuel burns high, Malik called. 90 minutes, tops. Enough to reach the fishing lanes, Michael said. Ben's old tender should be anchored there, if luck exists. Luck's a rumor, Doyle answered, eyes on the compass. Rotor noise faded, swallowed by cloud they couldn't conquer. The Agnes D slipped off shoreline radar, the way childhood dreams fade. Quiet. Irrevocable. Somewhere behind, stone cracked a little wider, waiting to be filled with something better than blood. The diesel steadied, carrying them deeper into dark water as the last flare of light died behind the fog. A hard white beam swept the deck of the Agnes D, turning Doyle's beard chalk pale, striking the salt spray into shards of glass. Rotor wash hammered the trawler's rails, sleet lashed sideways. Michael planted his feet at the midship winch. One hand steadied the Browning at low ready, the other gripped the cable Malik had coaxed over the side seconds earlier. Below, the inflatable rib bobbed in the trough, black on black water, outboard tilted and waiting. Cable's bird nesting, Malik's shout cracked in the wind. If it locks, we lose the boat. Then clear it, Michael said, calm cutting through the chaos. Solve the machine, not the panic. Malik dropped to a knee, wrench flashing whenever the helicopter's light passed over him. From the wheelhouse, Doyle's voice boomed through the PA. Pier at 100 yards, shore teams are stacking up, two vans and rising, we dock, we're boxed. Grace jogged aft, hair whipping. Radio chatter says their priority is Kuznetsov alive. That gives us seconds, not minutes. Ahead, the abandoned ore pier materialized out of fog, rotted pilings, skeletal cranes frozen mid-gesture. Floodlights snapped on along the concrete apron, bleaching agents into featureless silhouettes. At their center strode Rebecca Klein, headset crooked, her gestures crisp and economical. Michael lifted the handset to Doyle. Bring us broadside. The moment the dinghy's free, you three move aft. I'll meet Klein mid-pier and keep every eye on me. Grace's brow furrowed. You promised to quit setting yourself on fire. Smoke, not flames, he answered, brushing a thumb across her knuckles. Trust the trick. Malik's wrench rang. The drum lurched. Line's clear. Boats away. The cable hissed out and the rib splashed, rubber hull flexing but intact. Grace vaulted the rail into it. Malik followed, nearly losing his footing. Doyle tossed down a duffel, ammo, passports, the last of Michael's cash, then jumped. Michael sparked a flare, red light roaring in his grip. He jammed it into a drum of net preservative and kicked the barrel overboard. Burning fuel fanned across the surface. A floating sheet of fire rolled toward shore. The helicopter yanked skyward to dodge the heat, its spotlight sliding off the trawler. In the momentary dark, Michael sprinted along the catwalk, boots rattling rusty grating, coat snapping behind him. Rebecca Klein saw him first. She raised a hand, halting her rifle teams, and stepped forward alone. Firelight washed their faces blood orange. 10 paces apart, he stopped. No gun, she noted. You think you're talking your way out? Talking beats bleeding. He lifted empty palms. Let the others go, Rebecca. No one else has to pay for this file. You've already torched federal property and scattered half the county. Yet every pulse still ticks. Let's keep it that way. Behind her, a secondary spotlight groped through the smoke for the rib, but met only fog. Klein's earpiece crackled. She ignored it. Surrender now. I can shelter the librarian and the kid. Langley loves tidy endings. So tidy they slice off conscience? Her rifle dipped a fraction. She caught herself. Don't push. You were pushed first, he said, voice soft. Orders from people whose suits will never smell cordite. Down pier, an agent leaned over the rail, squinting into smoke. Doyle answered with a flare that screamed past the man's helmet and burst against a lamp, plunging the apron's edge into darkness. Klein flinched. Michael moved 2 steps in a dive behind a mooring bollard. Shots tore up planks where he'd stood. He drew the Browning but kept it low. A round hit the bollard, showering rust. Hold fire, Klein barked, fury and fear tangled. The shooting ceased. Michael rose, pistol still pointed at the deck. They're gone, he called over the hiss of burning fuel. She exhaled, shoulders sagging. Slowly she thumbed her magazine release. The mag clattered to the boards. If I let you vanish, I own the fallout. Someone has to stand inside the crack and hold the walls apart. He slid the Browning across the planks to her boots. Say I yielded. Keep your post. Mend the stone from within. She stared at the pistol, then at him. Where will you run? They'll close every port. Some place where mortar flares don't color the night sky. He backed toward a ladder, hands still raised. All right. Rotorwash returned, more birds inbound. Klein scooped up the Browning, shoved it under her jacket, and spun to her men. Subject in water, she ordered. Recover alive. Authority rang in every syllable. Michael slipped over the rail. Lake Erie hit like broken glass, stealing breath, but training clamped panic. He stroked under the pier, following the distant cough of Doyle's outboard. When his fingers found Hypalon rubber, he slapped it hard. Grace and Malik hauled him aboard. Doyle throttled down to listen for pursuit, then opened the engine wide. Grace wrapped a blanket over Michael. No words. Wind and engine would shred them, but her palm on his cheek said enough. The dinghy knifed east, hugging ice crust until a small island's silhouette rose. A gravel strip. A twin-prop Antonov waiting, props idling low. Its pilot, a square-jawed woman Michael knew only as Petrovna, watched from the ramp. Cutting it close, Capitan, she said. Habit, he answered, urging the others up the ramp. Doyle paused at the hatch. My road ends here. Michael clasped the trucker's hand. Leave a little pavement clear. Might drive it again. Make the road worth missing, Doyle said, then melted into the fog. Petrovna sealed the door. Malik buckled into a canvas seat, hands still shaking from winch duty. Grace settled opposite Michael, blanket draped over both. The Antonov lumbered forward, snow swirling past the portholes. As wheels left gravel, the mainland lights receded, search beams raking water where nothing floated. Grace laced her fingers through his. Let's find a town without cameras. Or one that forgives them, he said, eyes closing for the first time in 2 days. The aircraft climbed toward indifferent stars. 4 months later, Sokol District, Moscow. A March thaw drummed from sagging gutters outside a modest auto shop. Inside, Mikhail Petrov tightened the last lug nut on a Volga and reached for the steaming samovar. The postman handed him a single Ohio-stamped envelope. He opened it carefully. A worn library card bore Grace Whitaker's name. Behind it, a photo of Malik in fresh coveralls beneath a university engineering banner. On the back, Grace had written, "Story hour resumes when the compass points home. Bears still find kind strangers. Keep a copy of that truth." G. Michael slipped the card into his breast pocket, next to Doyle's earlier postcard. "Turbines still hate winter. Roads clear." A small, private laugh escaped him. Snow melt spattered against the window, but the air already hinted at spring. Langley, the same day Rebecca Klein stood before the director's desk, her redacted report closed like a sealed wound. "You confirm Kuznetsov died in Lake Erie?" he asked. "I do. The water keeps its secrets." He weighed the words, then nodded. "Case dormant." She left the office, walking the corridor that housed the new mosaic, cracks polished away until reflections stared back unbroken. Yet as she passed, she saw a hairline fissure the grout had missed. She touched it gently, a promise to herself. In her secure drawer waited two objects, the slide of a Browning high power and an unsigned postcard of Lake Erie in winter. She closed the drawer, a thin smile balancing resignation and resolve. Outside, early cherry blossoms drifted across the courtyard. Fragile proof that cycles can bend toward renewal, no matter how many borders are crossed or bridges burned. And somewhere between hemispheres, a mechanic sketched an engine meant to run so quietly it left no trace, certain that the best kind of silence is the one that mends instead of hides. Thank you for choosing A Story Publishing.